From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
On September 9th, Apple and EMI will release all the Beatle albums newly remastered and sounding better than ever. On this edition of All Songs Considered, the Beatles remastered and what it all means. There'll be two box sets. A limited edition mono box set will contain everything up to the White Album, the last Beatle album mixed in mono, and it will contain a disc full of mono mixes of their singles. The stereo box set is not a limited edition. It will contain all the original Beatles British releases, plus a disc of stereo singles and a DVD of short films about each release. The packaging is gorgeous with both original and newly written historical liner notes. And unlike the mono box, you can buy each stereo CD individually. The person that wrote those liner notes is Kevin Howlett. He's a Beatle historian and documentarian. He joins us from Abbey Road Studios to talk about these long-awaited releases. And I asked him to start off explaining just what remastering is.
The recording process, which started in 1963 with the Beatles recording just on two tracks, it has developed so much over the years, but they really worked with a maximum of eight tracks by the end of their career. So when you have instruments to spread across eight different tracks on a multi-track, you then mix them down to a two-track stereo tape or a single-track mono tape, as in the case of the Beatles. Now, you can, with modern technology, go back to those multi-tracks and clean them up and remix the whole thing. Which the Beatles have done on a few projects. For instance, the Yellow Submarine Song Track album, which came out when the film was reissued. They went back to the multi-tracks and did a remix on the tracks on that album. But it was thought with the remasters of all the British albums that have just come out now in a box that you should just go back to the master tape, the analog stereo and the analog mono master tapes, the final mixdown, if you like, from either two-track, four-track or eight-track. And there you are preserving the integrity of the original recording that people would have heard when they bought an LP in the 60s. But what they have done, the amazing team at Abbey Road, is gone to meticulous care and attention to clean up any blemishes that might have been on the original master tapes that you can now correct, dropouts on the tape or any kind of microphone pops when people were singing too close to the mic, just smoothing out any little blemishes and making it as pristine as possible, but really not altering the integrity of the original mixes.
Can you give an example of where we would hear on an original recording a vocal pop or one of those blemishes?
There's a good example, actually, in Please Please Me. If you listen to the original recording of Please Please Me, there is a dropout on one of the background vocals, like I Please You, at one point. And you can hear that quite clearly, really. It's just a drop-in level. It's a fault. And if they had been able to correct it at the time, they would have done. And now it has been corrected, and so it's just not there anymore.
Come on, come on, please, please me, won't you, like I please you.
This music sounded pretty darn good on a record. It got transferred at one point to CDs back way back when. What is somebody, an average listener, an average fan, going to get by putting these on? What are they going to hear that's going to be different?
Well, if we're talking about the stereo albums, which is the main thrust of this campaign, the mono albums are really for collectors in a box. Talking about the stereo albums, for a start, the first four albums, when they were transferred to CD in 1987, were only heard in mono. So now you're going to hear them in stereo. Please Please Me with the Beatles, A Hard Day's Night, and Beatles for Sale. It's very wide stereo. It's that, vocals over to one side and instruments on the other side. By and large. But when you hear, for instance, A Hard Day's Night in stereo, it's a wonderful experience, and it's great to have that out again on CD. But they may sound just a tiny bit louder than the previous CDs, which, by the way, were not bad. we've had pretty good CDs around for 22 years. But I think particularly the first albums, you'll hear some improvements. I think that's quite noticeable. I've noticed, actually, with the White album, that's a real improvement. You can tell a difference. A warmer sound to some of the tracks. I mean, I love to hear things like Mother Nature's Son and Blackbird, which are fairly sparse recordings on the White Album, but they just seem, well, you know, just Paul McCartney seems to be in the room with you when you're listening to Blackbird.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead.
An album like Abbey Road, maybe the differences are much more subtle.
Why is that?
Because that was a pretty well recorded and mixed album. And when they transferred it in 1987, I think they just transferred it fairly flat, without anything being done to the original analog master tape, just transferring it over. I think there's, you know, been little touches, but they haven't needed to do so much. And I think that's the great thing about this remastering, is it's all been done with the greatest taste. And I think the Beatles have always been about doing things very tastefully. And so there was a trend with CD remastering about 10 or 15 years ago in the early days of CD, to just take away any tape noise that was heard, any hiss, and that would then also alter the sound of the rest of the recording. That hasn't been done. There's a statistic that's 525 minutes of Beatles music and only 5 minutes of it had any denoising, as it's called, and some of that was actually silences between the tracks rather than actually music.
In looking at some of the technical stuff that went on, I spent the most time so far with Sgt. Pepper. Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, the record I'm well familiar with, all of them, but that one more than any. And I've listened to in my life, bought, you know, Japanese pressings of it and French pressings of it, and trying to always get the best LP version of what I could. If I had the best pressing of an LP in my house, and I had the remaster in my house, what would be the difference?
Well, first of all, you need to think about whether you mean the stereo Sgt. Pepper or the mono.
Yeah, let's go stereo. I have both, but let's go stereo.
Yeah, because my argument is the mono Sgt. Pepper is really the right one.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's the one that I grew up with, and it's the one that the Beatles intended to spend. You know, they spent all their time on the mono mix and left the stereo mix to George Martin and his engineers, and they went off on holiday. The mono one is the right one, and so that's why it's so exciting to have the mono Sgt. Pepper now out on a CD, and it sounds wonderful. And there are actually very noticeable differences between the mix of the stereo Sgt. Pepper and the mono Sgt. Pepper.
Tell us some of them. I grew up on the mono one, but then, you know, in the last 25 years, I've heard nothing but the stereo.
Right. Okay. Well, the track Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds is a very good example. The way that John's vocal sounds in mono is much more flanged and phasey. That's the word they used in the 60s. Flange this for me, George. It's just that kind of ethereal kind of sound that's on John's voice is much more pronounced on the mono version.
Lucy in the Sky.
also the Sgt. Pepper reprise just before A Day in the Life. There's a bit where Paul is doing a wonderful kind of scat vocal, which maybe when they did the stereo mix, they forgot to fade up or something. It seems very distant, but it's much more in the foreground on the mono version. And there's all sorts of things. The laugh at the end of Within You, Without You is much clearer on mono. And in fact, the song She's Leaving Home runs faster and is a semitone higher on the mono Sgt. Pepper. So it was intended to be very speeded up, I think, because the original speed is the stereo speed, but they speeded it up for mono, but forgot to do that for stereo.
Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock as the day begins. Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock as the day begins.
So there's all sorts of differences that you can spot. You know, some fades are longer, the cross mixes are different. And I was just playing it today, actually, the mono Sgt. Pepper, and it sounds really, really good. I mean, I love the stereo too, because you did get to know that subsequently, and it's nice to have that separation. But the mono Sgt. Pepper, in the mono box, I wrote an essay in which I argue really that the authentic experience of listening to Sgt. Pepper is to listen to it in mono.
I love that. That's what I'll do tonight. let's go back one more time to this. Let's just make it all equal. You get the. I'll take this mono Sgt. Pepper album, you know, of the best pressing I can get. Put it on a turntable. I get the mono disc that has been worked on and remastered, and I put them side by side. What am I going to hear that's different
between the disc and the CD?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, again, it depends on what equipment you're playing it on. I mean, I think there is an argument that playing an LP on really good equipment and a good pressing, then you do get a fantastic sound. Most people, of course, don't listen to music that way. Everybody has a CD player, and fewer people have a good turntable to listen to music on. Although I think there may be a trend back to that now. So, in a way, I think what the remastering team have done is to try and get back to that authentic experience of listening to the vinyl record. Because, you know, an analog tape on a vinyl record was a pretty good way of listening to music. It has a warmth about it. And, again, early transfers of CDs just sound so harsh and brittle. The whole digital process means that you're missing bits of sound. So there is a warmth to analog and vinyl. And I think, again, they take so much care when they do these things. They listen to the vinyl LP as they're doing the remastering, and they compare and they try and get as close as they can to the sound of that. And, there hasn't been over-limiting, over-compressing of the sound. I mean, modern rock CDs just sound so compressed. They call it brick wall limiting, I think, and if you looked at the sound wave, it's just like a rectangle rather than a wave going up and down. So the dynamics are lost. And it's very uncomfortable to listen to, in fact. Harsh, brittle, over-compressed recordings of rock records are very tiring and irritating. And, you know, Beatles CDs had dynamics, and they've kept the dynamics. They may be a little bit louder than the 87 CDs, but nothing like as loud as a Red Hot Chili Peppers CD or something like that.
What about the detail? I was listening to the record, and maybe it was just the stereo I was on, but I was hearing detail in guitar. You could hear guitar picks. You could hear some in the stereo Lucy in the Sky. I could hear John's voice sped up, something I hadn't noticed before, because it seemed to be more high-end than I ever heard before. There was more round, warm bass to me.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, again, I think it's true of the, say, first four, five albums, and then, as I say, for some reason, the White album really impressed me in the warmth that you get of the sound on that. You do hear these details. I mean, you know, obviously, it sounds like you and I have both listened to these albums thousands and thousands of times in our lives. And, you know, it's the great thing about the Beatles is that you continue to listen to them, you know, year in, year out. I mean, it's not like we don't listen to anything else, but it's always wonderful to return to these old friends. And this has been another time to return to this wonderful catalogue. And, you know, talking to other people who've listened, many people have come back with stories that, oh, I never noticed the cough on the beginning of Taxman before, or I never noticed this. And so it's great. I mean, we're zeroing in on the most wonderful recorded catalogue in, you know, post-1955 popular music. And to hear new things has got to be so exciting.
It is sort of like discovering old friends again. It's sort of like watching that great old movie that you always saw, but you had your 20-inch color TV, and then you put it on a nice big screen. I'm finding that I'm getting inside the head a little bit of the creativity that's going on. There's because of all the attention to detail that I can really zero in on. Some of it with fresh listening, you know, I haven't sat down and listened to some of these records in a long time, you know, which is how I always used to listen to records instead of being on the go and listening to records. And so,
yeah, I think that's a very important point, actually, that people, especially the younger generation, don't listen in the same way that people who grew up with the music in the 60s and the 70s did. They tend to have it as background, they tend to have it on the computer, they tend to listen while they're travelling with background noise on a train or a plane with headphones on, whereas I remember so clearly, you know, sitting in the dark, listening in the right position between the two speakers or with headphones on and really absorbing every nuance of the record. And I think the excitement around these remasters has meant that people are going back to listen from start to finish to these albums again, when perhaps they've only just heard the odd track here and there. And it's a wonderful experience, because they were designed as albums, and they were designed as albums that had side one and side two. So you have a fantastic opening track that really launches you into the album, and you go through different moves in the end on a particular track, and then there's a track chosen to launch side two. So they were very carefully compiled and meant to be listened to from start to finish. And of course, something like Sgt. Pepper, with the tracks running together and having some sort of concept to link the songs together, it is an album experience. And so much these days is you know, shuffled tracks, randomness, if you like.
Right.
And this is not meant to be random. It's meant to be listened to so that you get the flow of the album.
So your prescription, my prescription would be for anybody who gets either the entire box or any one of these individually, sit down like a good book or a good movie, turn the phone off. And have a good time.
Light a few candles, maybe. Get the real experience, right. You know, maybe some Josh sticks in the background. But it is remarkable when you listen to these, how skillful their arrangements were. I mean, that's one of the things that's really come home to me again, is they wanted to make every song sound different to the other one, and every album sound different to the last one. So there's so much skill in the arrangements, not just the arrangements where they bring in orchestral instruments and other elements, but also arranging for themselves within the four pieces in the group. So you get that right from the beginning with a song like If I Fell from A Hard Day's Night, which is a particular favorite of mine. It's just beautifully arranged, the harmony, the wonderful guitar playing, the drumming on it. And then you get the sophisticated arrangements later on using orchestral instruments, or even just a simple flourish like putting the French horn on a beautiful song called For No One on Revolver. The skill of choosing a great French horn player, really the best player of the time, Alan Civil, bringing him in, lovely solo, and then reprising that solo under a verse which Paul is singing. It's just such a lovely touch.
Your day breaks, your mind aches. There will be times when all the things she said will fill your head. You won't forget her, and in her eyes you see nothing. No sign of love behind the tears cried for no one. a love that should have lasted years.
When I first started playing these things, you're struck again by the energy of the recordings, because they're a band playing together. They're not phoning in their parts separately. So you have the joy of people playing together, and that comes over. And also, they seem to be so fast, you know, compared to modern-day records. Again, that energy, that vibrancy bursting out of the speakers, it's just so alive. And I think there are so many reasons why the catalogue will endure forever.
Is there any one surprise that really knocked you out? You've mentioned a few things that were real favorites, but is there any one thing that you said, wow?
It's so hard to pick one, but yeah. A particular favorite song of mine is Here, There and Everywhere. And to hear that track on the remastered stereo Revolver is just breathtaking, because you hear those beautiful harmonies in the background so clearly. The guitars, the sound on the guitars on Revolver is just phenomenal, and the way they're played on Here, There and Everywhere. And again, an example of their great taste. There's one little harmony line that they do in Here, There and Everywhere, and they only do it once. And I listen for it every time I hear that song. It's just a great moment. They were so good at having little hooks in every song they did that just make you want to listen again. I think that's the amazing thing about the Beatles, that you love the song so much, but there's always something that makes you want to go and listen to it again. So you never get tired of this catalogue.
Kevin Howlett, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Kevin Howlett wrote the liner notes to the Beatles remasters, and he joined us from Abbey Road Studios in London. I'm Bob Boylan. For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.
Could be there.